Don't need to start just yet. I'm just trying to get a little survey of who's in the room and what you're here for. I think we've got a few minutes here. I understand that. Okay.
So you want us to speak up about why we're here?
Well, for example, how many of you here are deeply interested in how to use windowing functions, like as the end user? Okay. How about if you're interested in how they were done and where they're going? Okay. Anybody volunteering to help improve the windowing functions? Aha! <Okay. laughs> Yeah. It's twas ever thus. Is this loud enough?
Yeah.
It's good. The which?
The velvet room, where they're having dinner tonight. The velvet room, you know where that is?
Alrighty, let's get started. My name's David Fetter, and I've been talking about windowing functions for a little while, but the guy who really gets the credit is standing right here. His name is Hitoshi Harada, and he wrote the windowing functions for PostgreSQL. Can I get a witness? Ready. So let's get started. What are they? Does everybody have a fairly clear picture? No? Okay. Well, they're a little bit like the classic aggregates, you know, some count, stuff like that, but they also do more. Lets you get to a set of rows in the result set from the current row. And that set is not just the current row. They were introduced in SQL 2003. There's some more detail in SQL 2008. That is for the nice people who want to look at these slides later. So I'll be posting them. As a matter of fact, they're already posted on PG Experts right now. In a sense, this is a compatibility checklist feature because all the major proprietary databases already have them. So Oracle SQL Server for Microsoft, Sybase, DB2. Did you say Firebird was getting them? Okay, so, but not yet. So, but this is sort of the way of the future in free software. Harada-san is leading the way. This is mostly an OLAP feature. You can use it in transaction processing. You just have to be a little careful. The nature of this beast is that it scans a lot. Right? How they work, what you get. Has anybody used them before? Winnowing functions? Yes? No? Okay. So I'll take it slow through this part. I hope you'll bear with me. So a windowing function, a window table, it operates in a window. It returns a value for each row, and then the return value gets calculated from the rows in the window. So that you can think of windows of data as these kind of segments in the result set. So,
Yes. You used the term window.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so a window of data.
Well, you used window.
Sorry. It's sort of like a table in a result set.
Oh.
It's less. It's not something that you do at DDL time. I guess I should mention that none of this is DDL stuff. It's all DML, data manipulation. So you can use the new windowing functions. We'll go into what those are, what the built-in ones are. You can use existing aggregates in new ways. So we'll talk about that. There's also a way to do user-defined windowing functions. As usual, Postgres gets its big wins from being extensible in just about every direction. And you can also use your user-defined aggregate functions if you've written any of those. But here's the big one. From inside the row set that's coming back, you can reach outside of the current row and do stuff and get that. We'll talk about some of the implications of that, some of the things you can do with that. But this is the idea. Yes?
Maybe you'll answer this later, but for an existing procedural language that you can write an aggregate function in.
Yeah.
Do you have to make any changes to that procedural language in order to take advantage of this?
Well, aggregate, no. Nothing you have to do.
Nothing new you have to do.
There's nothing new for aggregates. We don't yet have support for PLs to write windowing functions in. And there are some gotchas in the aggregates that we'll go over later. So here's basically what aggregates look like. You're sort of collapsing things down over the entire result set. So you get, select key, some value, like that, group by key. In windowing functions, you get sort of a multiplier effect. You can slice it up into partitions. And do your computations in there. This is especially handy for reporting types of queries. So let's take a sample data set. We want to find out who are the highest paid employees compared with the departmental average. So we're going to slice up by department. And here's how we do it. Let's walk through that query a little bit. Select dep name, epno, salary, average salary over. So this is a new thing that you hadn't seen before It's a special part of the windowing aggregates. And then it says partition by department name. And we said average of salary, and then all the way over to there, and then we cast that as an integer just because we want to have a little bit prettier result sets here. Everybody with that so far? Too fast, too slow? Anybody still awake? Okay. So we have salary minus average salary over the same partition. So we repeated the partition here. We'll show you how later not to have to repeat it. But it's, you know, just one, you know, just a few things at a time. From salary order by diff, that's that alias descending. So we have we probably should have summed this sum up. Oh wait, we've got the diffs along here. So we have a report of how far off the average everybody is. Oh, thank you. Okay, so along this column we have sort of a spread away from the average. So right about here is where the departmental average is. And up here we have some very lucky developer, and down here we have some somewhat less lucky developer, or at least less well paid. Okay. So does everybody see sort of what's going on here? They're finding how far away you are from your department's average, not from the average salary generally. So you're slicing it up into these partitions by department. Sorry? There should be a comma right there. Yes. Thank you. I'll fix it. Let's see. Is there anything else wrong with this query? Just well, I'd rather know. I can only fix things that I know are wrong. Yes.
I'm curious about specifying the type. You have colon, colon, int.
Yes.
Could you just put in anything out there and it would just try and convert it?
It would try, and if it failed, it would, you know, it would do all kinds of horrible things. But
so it doesn't actually. Because I mean, it is taking the like the average of the salaries over there. So wouldn't you use the same data type and just like because it's averaging the ints. So
well, the average of ints is a float. No, I mean that's how they define it. The you could make a good case for having an average which stayed inside the integer domain. Well, actually, it wouldn't be that great a case because, you know, expected values don't need to be inside of the set of values in the domain.
It'd be ugly for the average of 1 or 2.
Right, yeah, it's sort of... Yeah, what exactly do you do as the average of 1 and 2 if it's supposed to be an integer? So, but we just cast it to an integer. Actually, Harada-san cast it to an integer because it was a much nicer looking number than what would have come out. Alrighty, so let's take a look at what is a window made out of. So it represents a row set. This is always a row set in a... It's sort of a result row set. Again, it's done at query time. So there's always a partition. The partition is specified by the partition by clause, which could be empty. You don't have to actually partition, right? The partition never moves, so you have taken this static window or this static partition of data in your result set, and you're going to sort of play in that space. So a partition can also have inside of it a frame which you specify with an order by, and it can move inside the partition, and it's sort of strictly defined to be inside one partition. Some of our windowing functions take values from a partition, others take them from a frame. So this is what a partition clause looks like. There's a function with arguments, like say sum of x. This would be an example of a function. Over, and then a partition clause. So we had partition by department earlier. Everybody see that down below? And then maybe an order by, and then maybe a frame clause, which is, that's the, we'll get to one of those later. As a matter of fact, we'll get there now. So a frame specified by the order by clause and a frame clause in over. So how far does the set go? How is it ordered? And if you just use over with open and then a closed parenthesis, you just get the whole result set. So you can have an empty frame and partition. So order by something, some expression, just like you're used to doing in Postgres. That expression can be fancy and complicated if you really want it to be. It can have functions in it. Can it have subqueries? Hmm? Can the expression have subqueries?
In sub, yeah.
Okay. So there can be very strange stuff in this expression. And as 8.4 has given you, you can sort ascending or descending, and then nulls first or last independently. And then in the frame clause, this is meant to illustrate some of the things you can do with it, not all. So rows are range between unbounded preceding or unbounded following and current row. For some reason, the SQL Standard Committee just loves to talk a lot with lots of keywords all stretched in a row. And that there is an excellent example of how they like to go on and on. I think they're frustrated COBOL programmers, some of them.
Well, I think they are trying to make it sound like English.
Yes, yes. Which I don't know that those are really necessarily sort of opposites. You know, what you and I just said, it's...
I agree.
Right. Okay, so moving right along. I talked a little bit earlier about being able to use those windows somewhere else, and this is how you do it. You can specify a common window definition. Actually, you can do it with several. And then you can use the windows at the same query level as your select. So you can't go to inner queries or you can't go to outer queries. But if you have a window at the same query level, this is what it's looking like. So you have your select from where, group by having, and then all the way at the end you can say you're defining your window as a partition clause, an order clause, a frame clause, and any or all of those can be empty. You want more windows, you put a comma here and define another window. You just say the window keyword once, and then just aliases for your other windows. So this can make your this can really tame a lot of the complexity of your reporting queries, because you define the windows just once and there may be several of them, and then they may have several different things that you're reporting on. So you say your windowing function over the window that's defined all the way down here. Everybody good so far? Sorry? Yeah, it's very similar. It sort of lets you stash the operation off somewhere and then, you know, repeatedly access it. It's like CTEs a little bit. CTEs are, well, Greg Stark will be covering those later. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some of the built-in windowing functions. These look all fairly familiar. Stats, statistics. Okay, so we have row number, rank, dense rank, percent rank, cumulative distribution, entile, lag and lead. We'll talk about all of these. We'll walk through here and you'll see a lot of pain going away, because you'll be able to do things that used to be very, very painful and tricky and sort of one-off to do, but you'll be able to do them with great ease. So who here has tried to get row numbers out of a result set and had fun with it? Okay. I don't see any hands. This is how you do it with windowing functions. Select value, row number. There's no, this doesn't take arguments. Over, order by val, descending from table. So the row number will always increment no matter what happens. This isn't true of all the windowing functions. It won't always change. But this one will just say 1, 2, 3, 400 at a time. So always incremented. How about ranking? So
can I ask a question?
Oh, sure.
What if you had an outer order by in the select statement? What would happen?
Well, it might scramble the row number. Say if you put like order by value ascending, let's say, right here, what would happen is that it would scramble the row number would still be with respect to its ordering.
You get the same rows but in a different order.
You get the same numbers, right? They'd be 1 would correspond to this 5, 2 would correspond to this 5, 3 would correspond to this 3, 4 would correspond to this 1. But if you had, for example, ordered this, or ordered by value ascending, what you'd get is this tuple first, this one second, this one, and this one. I'm not sure which order they'd come in. I'm guessing they would. Yes?
Will this actually use the order by? I mean, we might expect a random order.
Just generally, it's a really good idea to specify any order you want to see. I believe in this case it will, in the absence of another order by, that's the sort node that will get shuffled in there.
That's a detail of the current implementation.
That's a detail of the current, right. Right. So just, yeah, if just generally in SQL, if you want an order, be sure you specify it. In this particular case, because it's this really simple thing without, you know, extra sort nodes that could show up in there, and the sort nodes that do show up hit every row in the result set, it's going to come out this way. Okay, so next one up is rank. So you wanted to rank the result sets. So this can produce ties, and it will also produce a gap. Does everybody see how that works?
How do you know the approach should be rank 2 because it's not accessible?
Actually, it's sorry?
Yeah, I will say, I mean, the gap is 5.
Okay, so this rank will produce, this kind of rank will produce a gap because you have a tie here, and then it keeps incrementing, right? If you want a different kind of rank, use dense rank. This one shoots out the gap. Why you might want to have a gap in there, you might want to see how far things are spreading out and get an idea of sort of discrepancy between the first and the second. Right, right. That's a much better example. Thank you. okay, so percent rank goes from 0 to 1. That tells you, you know, percentile values go from 1, 0 to, they're basically on the closed set 0 to 1. Percent rank over an empty set returns 0 for all rows because they're all peers. You haven't given it an opportunity to rank anything above another, so they're all 0. Here we have a cumulative distribution. That's let's see, preceding peers divided by total rows. So these two come together, so you get a 2 in the numerator here. So you get 1/2, 3, 4. N-tile. Does everybody remember percentiles? Well, that's n-tile of 100. N-tile of 3, we're seeing this sort of effect. So, let's see. If there's a remainder, add a row from the head. So we get this one. So we get the 5s together. Their n-tile of 3 is still 1. So it basically piles on from the beginning of the set here. Lag. This starts to look a little bit like time series calculations. This is the simplest form of the lag. It's the one argument. There are others. Check the wonderful Postgres documentation for lots and lots of detail on the other ones. I don't want to go into too much detail here. So the returns the value of the row above. Well, if there isn't a row above, it has to return a null. So watch for these. If you're doing calculations, make sure that your calculations take into account either that there's a null here or strip off the nulls. Whichever one you're going to do, just be aware that null is a possible outcome. As a matter of fact, it's a guaranteed outcome for this set. Okay, so lag only works on a partition. Lead, similar thing. It's returning the value of the row below. Right, so this one shows up here, this one shows up there, this one shows up here. There isn't one here, so null shows up here. First value, this is probably handier over, yes?
Could be lag, so lag from lag.
A lag of a lag?
Yeah,
I think if you put, you know, if you put another, if you put a say, oh, that should say lag, haha.
You kind of missed the window
You can't nest them, but you could say lag of.
So you say lag
from two rows, not one row, but three by one.
There's a two argument lag that says how many rows.
You can't nest window function, so you can.
But there's a lead and lag both have two argument versions where it can take a number as a parameter.
If you do that, you have to make subquery, and the lag, the result of the subquery lag.
Right. This might be a good place to put in a common table expression with this as. And you put your lag, and then you do another lag inside of the windowing function. Okay, so first value. This is probably more fun over a partitioned window than a non-partitioned one, because here it's a little boring. But it's not meant to be exciting. It's supposed to illustrate what's going on. Similarly, there's a last value. And you have to specify a little bit more because first is much better defined than last. First is a clearly identifiable row. Last, you have to say how far you're going before you stop. So you get this. Questions, comments? Well, it makes my brain hurt too, but we have good documentation on this, and you'll be able to see. So rows between unbounded following, so it says don't stop, and unbounded following, so it says don't stop on either end. Right. Should that say rows unbounded preceding?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Should that say rows between unbounded preceding and unbounded following?
Maybe.
Oops. Typo number two. These are all my fault, by the way. just to clarify, all the editorial mistakes there are. Yeah, I did them. Okay. I'll have to check back on that. Thank you. Is it usually unbounded preceding and unbounded following? Okay.
Yeah, I just pulled up an example of the ones I'm seeing, and that's what it's probably supposed to be.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to have decreased the time of this brain ache. Nth value. This should probably also say unbounded preceding and unbounded following. This is kind of a weird construction. I rather doubt you would use it in real life because you're saying nth val of val, comma val. Now the second val is the n. So normally you'd say nth val of val comma 3 or something like that.
Yeah.
But if you say val comma val, you get this very confusing thing. So the fifth, there's only four rows in the result set, right? So the fifth value is going to be null, right? And again, the fifth value is going to be null. The third value happens to be right here. It's 3. The first value, well, that's 5. Again, there's sort of like a lot of brain hurting here, but I think it
is not supported by Oracle.
Oracle apparently doesn't let you do this for what are probably, you know, very good reasons. So let's see, where are we at here? Okay, so aggregates. Here's how you're used to seeing aggregates. If you have a window function that's the empty, or a window that's the empty window, your aggregates behave like you'd normally expect them to, right? They just say some val, you can pretend this didn't happen, from table, and then there's the group by. Oh, wait, no, the group by doesn't need to be there because the over is. Where it gets interesting is you can now do cumulative aggregates. So when you have an order by here, little bits of Postgres machinery wake up and say, aha, something different is happening. So because this ordering is not a well ordering, you get little anomalies like this where the first two values are the same, so the sum is going to have to be the same over this particular ordering. So you have a cumulative sum. Then the next one comes along, well, that's a different ordering, so you've got a running total here. And one more, running total.
That sum on the first line is counterintuitive to me. Is that required by the standard that way?
Which?
The first line having the sum with its peers?
I believe that the standard says that the peers stuff all has to come together.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so I have probably yacked long enough about the things that I know a little bit about. Now, the gentleman who actually made this happen is going to talk to you about how it happened. This one records. Same with you need both. This one's for the room.
Okay. Is it okay? Okay. Thank you.
Sure. And from now on, I talk about inside the implementation. A little bit difficult, but keep awake. actually, window functions, where are they in the source code and in Postgres? They're identified by a flag in the PG Proxy catalog. And a new column pro is window column boolean. If this column is set to be true, the function is the window function. Also, all the aggregates, including user-defined ones in C language, PL language, can be called in window function, as David said. And also, you can find any information in pgproceed.h and the new coming window functs.c. There are implementations of built-in window functions, like rank, row number, lead. Then the relevant nodes are these. Most of these are window, so you can find in source code easily. The window func is primitive node for function itself. And window dev is over partition by or the by proceeding following, and window close is very similar to window dev, but this is the having which comes after the having close window blah 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 as W, and the plan node is window arg, and so window arg state is the executor node. So the most difficult point is in the planner and the executor. This is the result of explain of the query above, which contains two window functions. So yeah. From mSalary table, 6 can on mSalary, and the planner put a sort node for the red one, AVG function, because they are partitioned by dep name. So the executor have to sort the result of the 6 can to gather the dep name data, and then calculate the AVG, then again put the second sort node on that. Again, the sort key is depth name and salary, descending order. Then calculate the result of rank. Then sort is the order by the result of rank. Yes.
So is the window aggregate, is that basically just a range table expression?
Yes. Yes. We have to gather the data
so
by
it's a materialized sort of node in memory with all the rows.
Yeah.
There were question marks here.
Because the window function, the window definition is very long, and in the expression explain phase, the Postgres doesn't know how this is. So this is by definition, not by design, it will be question mark in explain. So the planner, how the planner that makes the explain result. The planner first the final knows the planner knows final output first and makes 6 scan node. Here target the final result 5 columns but 6 scan form table. The planner pulls only 3 because these can be pulled from the table. Then make sort and window aggregates. Then window function 1, AVG, is calculated. Still, window function 2 rank remains in the doesn't appear here, and then put another window arg node on that, and then calculate rank. So the AVG of the result of window function 1 is now var node to refer the result of window arg node 1. So this is very complicated, but this is the simple way to make this true. Currently, We could optimize it by relocating window functions, because this is the different way, because the rank, the way, order of the window functions are different from the previous slide. Rank is the downside and the ABG was upside, but to put this rank above, you can remove the sort node here, because the Postgres knows here the result of the window function already sorted by job name and salary, and again window function 2 needs to be sorted by job name, but this job name is already sorted, so there are no need to sort another sort operation. Actually, Postgres must be do this automatically, but we don't have to have this mechanism yet, so you have to do it manually. So be careful to explain, see what is doing when you use the window function multiple times. And the executor part. Prior to window functions, this is a simple model table. Each result row is put from table destination. Values are never shared. And for window egg node, we introduce window object powered by TopRestore. This is the row pool storage, temporary storage, so that the window function can reach any other rows from row 1 to row 3, for example, from row 4 to row 1. They can access by this window object. But this kills performance if the window object holds millions of rows. So we have mechanism to optimize this. For example, read functions like read or lag, they don't, for the later result, they don't need to reach the first of row. So we trim the window object, throw them away from the head to the position, so that we can save the memory and operate fast.
If the same window function or the same window is being used in multiple expressions, will this only be created once, or is it created once for each expression?
Yes, this window object is one for the window egg, and is shared with
expressions. This could be used to implement lateral.
You can't shrink that window object like you were there for all of these window functions. It's only some of them. Is that right?
Yeah, it's shrink. Huh?
There's only some.
Only some of the windowing functions will allow you to do that optimization that you were just showing. Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
For instance, the entire one probably wouldn't let you do that, because you're going to need the whole window. Is that not right?
Yes. So this is the sample of window function source code. The inside the window function, they catch the window object instance and do something from window object fetch value or mark position to trim the window object and return a value. So window function is called per the result. And this is for the Grayscale aggregates. Aggregates sometimes have two functions, trans and final function. Executor automatically call trans function by trans value and window object fetch value. Then the trans value is put into the final function, then the result one is returned. And window function, window agnode caches this trans value to the next trans function to calculate the next result. So the trans value in classical aggregates, the final function is called once, only once. But window args is calls final function multiple times. So be careful. If your own aggregates assume to be more than once.
Basically, you want an idempotent final function. If you apply it more than once, it should not do different things.
So this is, how to write your own window function. I think the most compelling point in this window function in Postgres is extensibility, because Oracle or DB2 supports window functions, but they cannot support the extensibility. We can write your window function, so this is very compelling. But we don't have so much time, so this is not documented, but you can do it. So if you have time, challenge it.
There's a documentation right there. Yeah? Well, there's also a piece of source code which has been published already URL.
So assume that you can write this only in C.
Yeah, only in C for now. And maybe later version support PL window functions.
Do you have this slide up somewhere on the wiki or something?
It's on the web so far, or it's on the PG Experts site right now as a document. It'll go up on the conference website as soon as I can get it there.
So I thought to explain about the window function APIs, but there are some sorts of window function APIs. Basically, you can write your function as the plain function, but you have to use window function APIs to fetch value from the other rows from the current row. Especially these three function APIs are prepared to fetch the value from the outside. Are you going to fetch the value from the partition or frame or the current row? This is almost same as pggget arg xxx as the Grayscale model. And you can find moving average example, which is written by me. With standard SQL, you have to wait for extended frame growth, full support of frame growth to calculate curve smoothing like the moving average. But this sample does it now without the full support of frame growth. So this is one chance. So the feature work for the later version, we lack some full support of frame growth, like rows shrinks. And currently, the frame only extends to the the downside. But in the SQL spec, the frame shrink from the head, so this is not support point. And also, performance improvements. Like, as I said previously, the window arc node in the plane, in the plan, you have to relocate the window function to optimize manually, but it should be done by Postgres automatically. Also, the user-defined window function can be peer, like peer PGSQL.
But it looks like the infrastructure is there. If I wanted to implement this in PLR, everything I need is there.
Yes.
It's just a matter of me doing it.
Yes.
Yeah. So finally, thanks all the hackers. This is my work, but many, many hackers helped me, including David Fetter here, and Tom Lang, Heike Rinakanga. This is a very big project, but I couldn't imagine I succeeded this project. So amazing. That's all.
We might have a few minutes for questions and comments, but we'll both be here for the rest of the conference in case those run out.
Is there like a tuple store, since that's being managed in memory?
Is the tuple store being managed in memory?
Yes. As long as the it fits in memory, specified by work mem configuration value.
So it doesn't have its own configuration.
If the result set of the is too huge to fit in memory, it spits out the disk file.
The tuple store is a general thing in Postgres code that automatically spills to disk if it gets too large.
So I was wondering if there's a separate configuration, like it's a separate RC comms out of where it's does it use, is there any way of guessing how much memory it's going to use?
Yes, yeah. Huh?
How would you guess how much memory it's going to?
It calculates the. When it receives a tuple, it calculates how much is the memory consumed. So then.
So if I have a dev name in your example, so if I'm putting it over dev name can be 100 characters.
Yeah.
And I have 50 departments.
Yeah.
Tuple store
has.
What would I guess as memory for that?
Tuple store has the remain of memory. Initially, it has the remain of memory specified by the work mem configuration, and then when it received a tuple from the executor, it reduced the remaining memory size. So.
Not really asking how your code is managing the memory. I'm more asking as a developer, how can I estimate if what I'm trying to do is practical to do? Is it practical to have enough memory to do the
right? So the way you figure the size is that there are some figure out what the row header is going to come out to, add on all the stuff for each of the Barlinos and the ints and stuff like that you have in there, and then multiply.
Does it explain indicators the tuple store is going to go to disk?
Does anybody know whether it explains?
Yeah, you can estimate it by PG.
It shows estimated row counts, doesn't it, as well as the columns that will be included?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does, but if you do explain analyze, does it tell
you? Well, explain analyze runs it, so it's.
Yeah, I know, but so you know, it should know if it expels the disk. I'm just wondering if it says it.
I mean, it may be same as almost same as PG column size function.
If it spills to disk, does that trigger the temp file logging? If you have that turned on.
Temp file logging, yeah, by configuring, maybe you have to build it by in debugging mode. You, when you compile the source code configure with enable debug or enable
source. I know there's a new setting to log when it creates a temp file, and I know it kicks in for like the sorts. I was wondering if that kicks in for tuple stores as well.
Yeah.
Not sure.
Oh, well. We have to clear out. We'll
okay.
We'll be around.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.